Think of it as a Rhodes Scholarship for a new generation. Nike's Phil Knight donates to Stanford. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. Phil Knight, the chairman and co-founder of Nike, is donating $400 million to set up a new international scholars program at Stanford University in California. It's tuition, room and board for 100 students a year, two-thirds of them from overseas, to study in Stanford's graduate programs. The idea is that these scholars will do research on poverty, climate change, and infant mortality, then go back home to help solve those kinds of problems. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us from our desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, where Nike is based. Good morning, Mitchell.
Hi, Lizzie.
$400 million, not too shabby. How does this stack up in the rankings of big endowments by businessmen to fancy universities?
Well, Nike chairman Phil Knight's latest gift to Stanford, where he got his MBA, by the way, is the biggest ever to that institution. It already has a massive endowment, $22 billion, which is just under Phil Knight's personal net worth of $25 billion and change. So for comparison, hedge fund tycoon John Paulson just gave the same amount, $400 million, to Harvard to boost engineering there.
Which brings up the question, every time we see one of these gifts to an elite university that already has a big endowment, do they need more money? I mean, is this fair?
According to the Council for Aid to Education, the top 1% of colleges in the U.S. receive almost 30% of all the money that's gifted. The Harvards, Stanfords, Yales of the world, they get most of these billionaire donations. Some critics would say that this gives these billionaires an outsized influence over higher education, in this case, how we address global problems like poverty and climate change. Phil Knight, for instance, he's given hundreds of millions to do cancer research in Oregon. He's also given a lot of money to the University of Oregon to build sports stadiums. Then he withheld the money for a while when he didn't like the university's policy on sweatshop labor, and that had offended Nike.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you.
You're welcome.
Vice President Joe Biden and Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker are in Mexico today. They're attending what's called the High-Level Economic Dialogue between the U.S. and Mexico. The U.S. is Mexico's largest trading partner, and Mexico is number three for us. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more on the talks.
This is the third year of the High-Level Economic Dialogue with our neighbor to the south. Shannon O'Neill of the Council on Foreign Relations admits the talks may not be exciting, but they are really important.
These are things like regulations for particular industries. They're where to put particular border infrastructure, where to move around customs or other officials to make the flow of goods easier and faster.
Whether that's been accomplished in the last couple of years is up for debate, says Duncan Wood of the Mexico Institute at the Wilson Center.
I think it would be naive to expect a huge outcome from these meetings so far. So we're very much in the socialization phase.
At the meeting, he expects a focus on how the Trans-Pacific Partnership will affect U.S.-Mexico trade and, of course, energy.
To focus on ways in which lower energy prices, including the low oil price, are actually helping the competitiveness of U.S. and Mexican economies.
Particularly in the manufacturing sector. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Donald Trump won the Nevada caucuses for the GOP last night, and this Saturday is the South Carolina primary for the Democrats. Last year, the Obama administration named a six-county region along South Carolina's coast a promise zone. That means for the next 10 years, it'll be prioritized for federal grants and loans. Our Wealth and Poverty Desk took a trip to part of that state where almost a third of all residents live in poverty. Here's Marketplace's Caitlin Ash.
So this is Bamberg.
This is the home of Governor Nikki Haley.
That's right.
Robert Thomas drives around Bamberg County, where he lives, pointing out abandoned houses.
I mean, they've been empty and blighted for 20, 25 years.
Thomas runs the Southeastern Housing Foundation. He plans to tear down 32 of these homes by next summer.
The values in these areas, that it would cost more to rehabilitate and make them livable again than the value of them once they're completed.
In this part of South Carolina, population is declining, 28% of residents live below the poverty line, and there are not a lot of high-paying jobs. So about a year and a half ago, a group of nonprofit leaders came together and applied for a federal promise zone. South Carolina's was one of 123 communities to submit an application. Danny Black runs the Southern Carolina Regional Development Alliance, the zone's lead organization.
We were so bad that we won.
So far, a total of 13 communities in the country have been named Promise Zones. They have a better chance of winning federal money for affordable housing, education, and job creation.
What it does, it opens the door and gives us a little bit of a leg up that if we're competing with a county that has 3% unemployment and we have 12, we should get the nod. But it's certainly not a handout.
That's an important talking point in South Carolina, says Bernie Mazik, CEO of South Carolina Association for Community Economic Development in Charleston.
There are folk in the state that definitely don't believe in a handout, and we never promote a handout. Communities have the ability to bring about change for themselves, but we need you to invest in us.
Mazik believes the federal program could revitalize the region. So far, several grants have been awarded for infrastructure projects and farmers markets. Local leaders hope the Promise Zone will eventually lure big employers to this rural part of the state and create jobs. In South Carolina, I'm Caitlin Esch for Marketplace.
I also spoke with Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack about rural poverty. You can listen to that interview on Marketplace.org and a longer version on Marketplace Weekend. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.